Welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast, a place for conversations with church leaders about social media.
Welcome to this episode of the Social Media Church Podcast. I'm your host for this week. It's Jay Kranda. Niels is not on this episode, but we got a special guest, Andrew Mason from Real Life Church, the small groups pastor and also founder of smallgroupschurches.com. He also blogs when he's not with his family at andrewsmason.com. So Andrew, thanks so much for being on the show this week.
Thanks for having me on, Jay.
Yeah, I'm pumped. You know, we've started to interact a little bit. And the funny thing is, you know, as we think about it, even like we haven't spent a lot of time face to face, but we started, there's this conference that we started working on together, a small group network, the Young Leader Lobby Conference, which you can learn more at smallgroupnetwork.2030. And I just was thinking about even our relationship, how we kind of started online and we've kind of interacted heavily through email and different conversations, but we haven't spent a lot of time face to face, which is kind of, I guess that's more of the paradigm shift, right? You know, like that's just happening more and more. You just kind of connect online and then you meet face to face.
But, yeah, I could say, man, I've got a ton of relationships going now in the last 2-3 years that are they're purely digital.
Yeah, I know. It's such a funny thing, and it's so cool just to see how that's shaping. But let's dive into this. So you founded smallgroupchurches.com, and so for people who haven't visited that, tell people a little bit about what that site is all about.
Yeah, I guess the origin of it was that the denomination my church is affiliated with, they would get questions about small groups, and they would start sending the pastors and leaders to me. And as this kept happening, obviously you get to see patterns of questions, and I thought, you know, there's probably a better way I could address this. And so I created the site smallgroupchurches.com. And now, not always, but a lot of times I'll get questions and I can say, yeah, you know what? I got three articles that will give you exactly what you need. I'm going to email those to you right now. And so now I have, you know, over since I guess May 2012, over 3 years of content built up on there that it's just really easy to resource people and help people out with the questions they have regarding small group ministry.
Yeah. And it's such a robust archive now, I feel like, and it definitely feels like it's something that you and others have poured into, because there's definitely a ton of stuff. And so is the site is the majority of the main content all around how to do like life groups, small groups, cell groups? Is that kind of like the main portion of what you guys are talking about on the site?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's how do we, you know, make disciples through the ministry paradigm of small groups, cell groups. You know, there's a lot of other terms people have used for it, but the bigger one, the big two are small groups and cell groups. Yeah. It's basically around that ministry strategy.
Yeah. And you have a really cool group of people that kind of came together. So like I was curious, how did you had this idea, and I get this too. And actually, part of the reason why I started, you know, blogging on my own is, you know, doing online church stuff. You know, I get the questions all the time. How do you set up church online? What is this? And so I started to, you know, kind of save some of my emails and started archiving them a little bit. So now I do the same thing. I send them just the stuff I've written. But for you, you kind of got bigger than that. You started empowering other people, because you have people from different churches. So you have a guy, Ben Reed, who's on staff at Saddleback. And before that, he's been a small group leader for a long time within kind of the Christian community. But how did you start tagging other people? How did it go from just your thing to like, hey, I just want this to be a community thing? Like, what was the evolution there?
Yeah, I really didn't want it to become, I mean, I'm definitely, you know, the main contributor and curator of the site as the founder, but I didn't want it to be the Andrew Mason site.
Yeah.
I wanted this to be a site for you to go and have access to some of the best resources on small group ministry from around the world. So I look for two things. Obviously, I look for people who are knowledgeable and experienced in it. I'm still a fairly young leader, so I wanted to have guys that had more experience than I did in it. And I also was looking for guys who are active online. And that was a big thing. There's a ton of guys with knowledge and experience, but not all of them are active online. And so that was a big requirement as I was shopping around different names and trying to connect with guys, say, who could I bring on here to be a contributor, was looking at guys who had websites, looking at guys who were regularly posting on social media, because as people join the site, we have a forum that you can join and ask questions. Yeah. I wanted to have that dynamic where guys knew how to use the technology to connect with these leaders that would join our forum and our community.
Tell us a little, explain a little. I was just curious about this because definitely forums have been I feel like you're in an interesting place, because it was definitely that when that started popping up, that was kind of like really the first evolution of like a web 2.0 kind of experience. You know, it was heavy interaction that started growing. Is that something when you started the forums that just did that take your site to a real community aspect, and did you see a real change in kind of how your site was shaped, or was the forums kind of in there from the beginning? Did you build that in from the launch?
Yeah, it's in there from the beginning. Definitely. I mean, definitely have a vision. You know, there's times where I wish there was more activity on it,
yeah.
but the anchor of our site is our blog content. But the thing is with the forum, and I know a lot of people think the forum is kind of an old guard type of thing, and they could be right. We'll see what happens. For me, there's a couple things I like about the forum. Is one, all the content is archived. And, so I have my forum hooked up to a custom Google search engine on our site. So you can use the custom Google search engine and you can search for your questions, your ideas, and forums are just a really great way to organize a ton of information, especially when there's user content being created outside of, say, my blog authors or writers. All that can be archived and organized. The other thing is search engines still kill in the search engine rankings.
Interesting.
So if you have a question, you Google a question, you're still going to pull up message boards and forums and discussions. And so if someone posts something and two or three people comment on it, that post is going to rank huge on the search engine still. And so until those dynamics change, until there's either a better way or until it doesn't kill the search engine, I'm still kind of maybe a little stubborn on the whole forum process. I think it's still a great way to organize a ton of information.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was just remembering when I inherited kind of my role, and it wasn't really inherited, when I took over kind of the online campus at Saddleback, one of the web guys was kind of maintaining it, and one of his visions was to have a forum, and this was 5 years ago. So forums were very much, I would say, alive.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting because I struggled with it and I don't know if it was because of my experience with online or even at the time, my just opinion. I didn't use forums day to day myself, but
right.
I actually removed it. And then I found myself a year later actually regretting it because I was like, man, there was a type of community, because what happened was since it was associated with our church, what it tended to be was kind of like a theology conversation place. There was a lot of like, just, I don't know. It was more of an academic conversation. I think that's why I struggled. I wanted it to be more personal. So I was like, yeah, we can, if you were curious about what Saddleback believes here, we can have that conversation. But I found that I lost something when I removed it, and I didn't necessarily replace that avenue until our small group strategy got more robust. But there's definitely something there. Even now, like, I mean, every time I Google something, specifically if it's with, and this is going to transition to how you set up the site, but you know, I do a lot of WordPress stuff, and when I set up things on WordPress and I don't know how a code works or something, when I Google something, hey, how does this work? I tend to land on a forum somewhere, somebody has answered it on a forum, and I've copied and pasted so much code from a forum that, yep. You know, it's crazy. So I definitely think that's definitely something that, you know, I don't really see forums changing. I'm just curious as they evolve, what that will look like. So I definitely see a value. And that's actually what I love about your site, because we were talking about something with the Young Leader Conference with Small Network, and we were posting something in your forum, and I definitely see a benefit there. But with your site, how did you set that up? Was that something that you self-hosted, or is it on like a WordPress thing, or did you build it on something else? Did you build it? How did you go about doing that?
Well, I'm not a programmer, so I'm not at that level of it, but I did actually own my own business for 3 years where I helped companies just build websites and blogs. And so when I went into it, I think it's really important that you know what you want. And I knew what I wanted. I wanted a blog, and I wanted to be able to duplicate that content into a form community post. So every time we write a blog, it's automatically duplicated into the forum so that it's mixed in, you know, our blog content is mixed in with user created content. So when you're on, so you don't have to have these, sometimes I've been to sites, they have a blog and a forum, and it's like two different worlds within the site. And it's like, wait, did I see that in their blog, or did I see that in their forum? So, I do have a friend who's a programmer. He actually runs the website for William Jessup University out here in Sacramento.
Oh, wow.
And so we talked about, hey man, I'm a WordPress, fan, WordPress evangelist. So,
So I
said, hey man, I'd love to do a WordPress blog that integrates with a form. And he did a little bit of research for me. And so we're using SimplePress on the form. And, some people don't like it, but I think SimplePress is great. It really has everything you need as far as forum, and it integrates beautifully with WordPress. And the thing we always look for is there an active community working on, you know, the plugin? So they're actively working. They have new, sometimes they have too many updates. I'm like, man, slow down with the updates, you know, but they're constantly working on SimplePress, and it plugs right into the WordPress.
Oh, that's sweet. I was asking this question of how you set up, because I find myself some of my information of like learnings of at least, I'm not a programmer either, but I do know how to set up sites, you know what I mean, in very simple ways. How much do you feel that those just small learnings, those things that you're aware of how to set up things and even manage things, help you with your ministry?
Oh, I think it helps you tremendously. And I think it comes back to the more you understand, the more you can answer the question, what do I want?
Mm.
So obviously I'm not a programmer, but I can manage the back end of a site once it's set up. And so because of that, I understand, you know, even, you know, getting the right host, like the host I have is the number one rated host for a WordPress site. You know, I'm using Bluehost.
Yeah.
I know exactly what I want my homepage to look like and what I want my blog layout to look like. And when I'm talking to a programmer, I can explain those things to them, where when I built sites for customers, you know, they would tell you kind of what they wanted, but they really didn't know what they want. And then you build it for them. They go, oh, this isn't what I wanted. I'm like, well, you didn't know what you wanted.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big part is when you're able to know exactly how to talk about what you want, you can get a better end result.
Yeah. No, it's so funny, like how much that's changed. So obviously, you know, in seminary now, you know, stuff like that isn't being talked about, like how, you know, but more and more, but you know, I guess it traditionally was like, okay, your bulletin and some of these things, some print items were valuable, but now more and more people are, your web presence and your brand identity, all those things are so valuable, especially with a church ministry. I mean, you just have to have a presence, and all these simple ways of launching sites have kind of just made it, you know, you can get such a slick WordPress template and get stuff set up so easily now. And, you know, there's obviously problems with WordPress where you're always having to update or whatever it is. And so, but I definitely found that when I got familiar with self-hosting with WordPress, I feel like my knowledge, my general knowledge just kind of expanded, and I saw new avenues. I was like, oh, I can do that. Or I can help set up this or that. And I use Bluehost myself, and it's like, you know, and I learned, and I actually saw, because I saw your personal blog, you have the Michael Hyatt kind of template.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I actually learned how to do the Bluehost based off of his training video that he did.
Exactly.
And his training video was great. And if you haven't done this, you got to do this. And for sure, if you're listening, if you're thinking about online presence and all that, read Platform. Michael Hyatt's Platform is such a basic and valuable resource. Just go and read that. But he has a, Michael Hyatt does this, you know, how to start your own self-hosted site. And he does this tutorial video, and it was so simple. And I remember, even that idea of using like ScreenFlow or something to capture training videos unlocked another level. So that's why I was curious just with you. I see you doing all these things, and I was, it has to transfer and lead to challenging you and making you a better pastor and leader in your own context where you're doing church at, up in Sacramento. So I definitely see that myself, and I challenge people to kind of do that. So have you, I was curious with this, talking social media, you know, as a small groups pastor, how has social media, is social media good or bad as being a small groups pastor? I was curious in your context, how has that influenced kind of the health of your groups? Have you seen anything that has popped up recently that, you know, like, oh, has it led to knowing your hosts better, or has it caused more problems in your ministry?
Well, it definitely hasn't caused more problems. I think that, you know, I'd say on a general point of view, you know, if you haven't embraced social media, it's the way, you know, the up and coming generation, it's the way they talk. It's the way they connect. Yeah. It's not like, you know, it's so organic. So you have to be engaged in it. You know, I have older people tell me what the rules are, like, well, you shouldn't talk about this on social media and you shouldn't talk about that. And it's like, listen, I'm either going to talk about it in real life and on social media, or I'm not going to talk about it in real life and social media. I mean, the rules got to be the same because it's the way people connect. But, no, it's definitely helped because I love seeing, pictures from, small groups and people talking about their small group. And I'm seeing, especially, let me tell you this. One thing that's hard when people aren't familiar with small groups is selling them on the whole idea of going to someone's house for a church event. It's easy to sell someone on a weekend seminar because they can visualize coming back to the church on a Friday night or Saturday morning. They know there's going to be probably worship. It might be a different band, like a headlining band. It might be a headlining speaker, but they have a general frame of reference for what that event's going to be because they go to your church every Sunday. So when I have someone that has never been to a small group before, and they see pictures on Facebook and they see pictures on Twitter of people's groups, it does make it a little bit more, it makes it a little bit more accessible, and it gives people a taste of it before they have to kind of step over that line and get out of their comfort zone and try it out. Definitely, we're ramping up for a fall campaign here, and we have a multi-campus, you know, framework here where we have, you know, five different campuses in our family of real life churches, and so we're starting a little hashtag called RLC Now. And I looked at different hashtags, and most of them were being used that would work. You know, we were trying to use RLC or RLC Life and different things, but they were already, people were. So at RLC Now, no one else was using that. Someone had been using it like 2-3 years ago, and now that their posts are buried underneath all of ours, we're hoping that what can happen, since we have five campuses, that if people use this hashtag, they can start becoming friends with people from the other campuses.
Interesting.
If they use the hashtag right, which most people don't, but if they actually click on the hashtag, they can find people at the other campuses and start connecting and staying in touch with everything that's happening in the groups across all five campuses. So that's something we're trying to integrate this fall.
No, I love that. And do you provide any, I was just curious, and you know, I don't think many people do this, but, and I think it's because of a fear thing. People, and you've mentioned this, that people are so fearful of what could happen, and they kind of allow the 1% of probability to kind of keep people away. Has any of that fear caused you to create any guidelines for small group hosts in any context to have to, here's how you use social media, or do you let it be organic?
I let it be organic.
Okay.
I think that, especially, you know, when you're using the host model and you're encouraging people to invite people to their house, if people don't have wisdom on social media, they're not going to have much influence, and no one's probably going to come to their group.
No, well said. No,
you know, it's kind of a system that it rewards you and it punishes you real fast if you're not using it right. And definitely, I mean, if there was a situation where I felt, you know, someone was really lacking wisdom and it was causing damage to people in their group, I would definitely confront that as fast as possible.
Sweet.
You know, but I haven't encountered that in a dramatic way yet at all.
Good. No. I know we provide models both in story and email of kind of like how we want people to use it, but we definitely don't have guidelines on that level. But I know some people, I hear that like, oh, what do you do here? And I think so often people, they get so scared of what can happen and they kind of project a negative kind of like, once you provide guidelines, you're setting the paradigm that something bad could happen. And so exactly. I was just curious in your context, if you ran into that, but I was curious with everything you're doing. So you, small groups pastor at a real life church up in Sacramento, you got smallgroupchurches.com. You're doing all these different things. You know, you're somebody who's definitely a digital native. You're adaptive. You know, we were talking before we even got on the air, like Google Hangouts and all this stuff going on. I was curious in your context, what are some things that kind of are integrated into your day-to-day life? Either it's an app or it's kind of a website that helps you be more productive. Is there something that you use that kind of, that maybe the average person, man, so like for me, you know, I always tell people about Asana, the task kind of, you know, you're able to manage different tasks. Is there something that you use that you would say, yeah, check this out. This helps me be more productive and ultimately I can do my job better.
Yeah, I definitely take advantage of the to-do list apps. I use Things because it syncs with my desktop. So when I put something into Things on my iPhone, it's automatically there on my desktop. And the reason why that could seem like, wow, that's not a very innovative, you know, idea. It's pretty generic. But for me, blogging and being active online is all about creating content. Mm. I have to be, you know, generating content almost on a daily basis. Not really, not technically, not on a daily basis. Definitely on a weekly basis. I have to be generating content to keep my audience engaged, to keep my tribe engaged. Mm. And so I'll be driving or I'll be waiting in line at the Starbucks, and I'll get an idea for an article. And man, I stop what I'm doing and I get out my to-do list app and I write down the title of the article, the two or three points that are coming to my head, and then I can leave it there. I can let it sit there. And then when I get into my content, my scheduled content creation time, I go right into my to-do list app. I don't go into my content creation time empty. Mm. I already have about five or 10 ideas that I have written down that I can quickly, because I can't spend, you know, four hours on a blog post.
Yeah.
You know, I can't do that. I have to get in and out of that content creation time, get it up online, blast it out my social media, and then get back to my job and my family.
No, totally. No, I love that. And I think that's such a, I don't think enough people realize like that, like the Things app, whatever it is, you need to have something like that. Cause it's in it. And it's not always, what I love about the way you said that is you're not trying to always adapt to something new, because you in the sense that you got to figure what works good in your workflow. And so for some people it's this or that, you know, and I've tried the Things app and I think it was just the timing of when I was using it. I was like, it didn't work for me. But once I used Asana, it does the same thing. It's the exact same thing. And so it just comes down to whatever you need to do, you figure that out. And people have told me about newer things than Asana. And I'm like, no, this works perfect for me. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need to change it out. And so I think it's whatever works well. And that's why I was curious of kind of what you use. So, okay. So the things that's great. All right, so last question, what is the most recent, maybe it's a book or it's a website or a blog. What's something you've read most recently, maybe in the last week or month that you think, that, you know, our listeners need to go check out. So is there something that you've read or something that you go check this out? This will change you, the way you're thinking.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. You're probably familiar with him. Are you familiar with Sean Cannell?
I am. Yeah. Sean was just actually on a show, a couple weeks ago. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He's one of my digital relationships that we've never met face to face. But I think he's got some of the most, you know, relevant, you know, stuff out there. I just watched one of his, he did a podcast interview with another guy, with some other guys, and he was talking about video content, you know, and he actually gave me a great idea, which this is something I'm just trying out right now, is he talked about how you need to have video content strategy for YouTube, obviously, which I'm already doing. I'm a big believer in, but you also have to have something for Facebook, and it needs to be different content than your YouTube content. And that got me thinking, and lately I've been dabbling with Periscope, which I highly recommend every leader to get onto Periscope and start experimenting with that. So what I'm doing now on Periscope, when you do a video, it's up for 24 hours, then it's gone. That video's gone after 24 hours. So what I'm doing now, they have in your settings, you can save the video from Periscope to your camera roll once you record it. So what I'm doing now is I'm going to do a weekly Periscope Tuesday at 9 o'clock. And it's either 1 week will be on small groups. Another week will just be on spiritual formation, spiritual growth. And 24 hours after I record that and it disappears, I'm going to take that same video content, upload it to the Facebook page, the correlating Facebook page.
Oh, I like that.
Whether it be Small Group Church's Facebook page or my personal Andrew S. Mason Facebook page. And so it's going to give me another content stream, video content stream, not only for Periscope, but also for my Facebook pages. But the seed idea for that started with Sean Cannell's. I wish I had it in front of me, but he recently did. If you look him up, Think International, and he's got a bunch of resources you can find.
Yeah, he's killing it with video influencers. That stuff that he's putting out right now, it's such a great thing. And we'll put links to Sean's stuff in the show notes. But yeah, YouTubeForChurches.com is his kind of master stuff he's doing. But he has his video influences that he's doing that is such – I've watched a bunch of the content. But yeah, Facebook right now is changing the game with their new Facebook Live stuff. I know they've rolled it out only to like kind of – heavy users, and my pastor was one of the guys that has been using it, the live streaming feature. And it's definitely a direct competition with Periscope for sure.
Yeah.
So it's such an interesting thing. Hey, Andrew, thank you so much for being on the show and sharing what you're doing. For everybody who's listening, you can learn more about Andrew at andrewsmason.com. You can go to smallgroupchurches.com, and we'll put everything in the show notes, where to follow them on Twitter and so forth. But dude, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy week to kind of be talking to our listeners.
Absolutely, Jay. It was an honor to be on, man.
Cool. Hey, for those listening, go to socialmedia.church to learn more and use the hashtag SMC podcast. So thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Social Media Church Podcast. Stop by socialmedia.church for the show notes and to learn more about Social Media Church. Please share this podcast with a friend and leave a review on iTunes or wherever you may be listening.